welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 240-something, 43? Yes, of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb. And Sean Orford, I nearly sat on one of your vegan little mini cupcake things.
What are they? Hey, you hearing this, Jodie? I'm making vegan sweetie treat cakes.
I've had one so far. Delightful, I must say.
Very good.
What's your secret, Sean?
It's love.
Cooked with love.
Yeah.
And responsibility, which is my little cue to say that's what we're talking about today. And it's kind of a bit of a trio of episodes that all tie in together. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I just got that thing.
It's not quite Lord of the Rings trilogy, but...
I don't know. Could be that.
Star Wars, maybe.
I'll be Gollum.
Yeah.
It was when we were talking about veganism with Jodie and that whole idea about the exercise of power. It suddenly struck me that a lot of things that we were talking about were people's use of power and misuse of power.
Yeah.
So last week we were talking about power, but the thing that follows on from that for me is the issue of responsibility. Power and responsibility have to go together. Hence, responsibility.
Which is why I've just moved that cake away from you, because I don't trust you to be responsible with it.
Not eat it.
That's my one. New listeners, liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Take a look for the show notes and links. Sign up for our emails and you will get free meditation files for a start. You'll get a discount code for our book, Live in the Present, which is pretty darn good. And you'll get weekly alerts about this show as well, so you'll never miss one. Pretty good.
You will.
So what have you been up to, Sean? How's tricks?
I am very good. Life is good.
I agree.
But very, very busy. I've just
I agree with that.
Started my detox, so I'm winding down this week. I've knocked out the coffee and the alcohol.
And you've had like six biscotti thingies or biscuits since I've got here.
That's just my fix for today.
Yeah.
I'm winding down. The thing is that this week the chocolate has to go. So when I do my detox, there's no alcohol, no coffee, no chocolate.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've had a drink today.
No alcohol. I gradually knock it all out, so like no tea.
Yeah, is this the similar one you've done in the past? Because we have got a link up somewhere so people can have a...
Well, the one that we have the link up is for the 13-day one.
Right.
What I'm going to do now is 3 weeks and then have a break over my birthday period when we go away for a bit.
Yeah.
And then I'll knock back on, but I'll do about 90 days.
I'll try and remember to put a link in this week's show for it. But it's 13-day detox on SeanOrford.com. I'm sure that's where we put it many years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a disclaimer in there, basically, to make sure you get a bit of doctor's advice before you have a crack at it.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah, you should always get advice before you do stuff like that. Especially, you never know.
Don't take advice from us, guys. We don't know what we're talking about.
If you've got any kind of diabetic-type problems, or if you're... and you may not know you've got them, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Or if you have any kind of allergies stuff, you need to just be aware of what you do. The 13-day detox, as is published on the site, also suggests ways of stopping addiction, like cigarettes and stuff like that, at the same time as detoxing, so you flush your system.
Okay.
So it can be useful for that.
Cool.
Yeah. So I haven't drunk any coffee or just like one cup of decaf a day since last Wednesday, and I can really feel the difference in that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite surprised me because I've been belting the caffeine a bit.
You can say, man, you're a bit of a... Well, are you a caffeine addict? Oh, yeah, you've hit pretty
well. Well, no, I do quite a lot of decaf, but I'm using an espresso machine with a decaffeinated capsule.
Yeah.
So I do mix them.
So what was the effect on the... Do you have like a couple of days where you had a bit of a headache at all?
No. It's really weird, this. I've never, ever had a headache in my life.
Get out of town.
I've never, ever had a headache. I've never taken a pain... I take the painkiller for broken bones and things, but I've never, ever taken a painkiller for a headache because I've never had one.
Wow.
And I see people with headaches and migraines and stuff like that, and I think I can see it, but I don't really understand it because I've never felt it.
Yeah.
You know?
Pretty,
and over the years when I did lots of substances that I shouldn't do, and had been off my cake. And other people would be rolling around the day after. I'd be, OK, come on, let's go and do it, because it didn't have that effect.
Wow.
Which I don't think is a good thing genetically.
You don't?
No,
oh,
no.
Do you mean because you could potentially push it too hard?
Yeah. I can remember my sister drinking a whole bottle of gin and getting up and walking home. Mm. You know, and I think there's something genetic in the family that's a bit like that.
Wow.
So you have to kind of be aware of
it. My wife had a belter of a headache. She gets migraines. She hasn't had too much lately, but she had a really bad one last week and it just knocked her out for like... I think she went to bed at like 7 o'clock one evening and she didn't get up till 1 o'clock the next day.
Well,
In the morning, it was just like I had to sort the lads out and she couldn't barely open her eyes.
Well,
but then you get all these old wives' tales about the best way to fix, because she's tried all sorts of medication, not really worked, been the doctors. Someone told her that you should get a pierce your that little bit of your ear,
above
your earlobe.
Yeah.
Because apparently it kind of releases, it's like a pressure point.
Yeah, it could be.
Some mum on the playground was saying that. I was thinking maybe it was because it was like the night of quite a big storm last week in the UK, storm something. They gave it a name, so it was quite big.
So have you ever had...
air pressure. Could be air pressure. I don't know.
Yeah. Have you ever had a big headache?
No. I've had very minor headaches, really. Very, very rare. Quite lucky, I guess.
Yeah.
But the only time I've had a really baddish headache was when I came off coffee. I used to drink a lot of caffeinated coffee and then I went cold turkey. I know it's not heroin, folks, but for a few days I had quite a nasty splitting headache.
Now, the difference for me in not drinking coffee is I actually feel more energised.
Mm.
That may sound weird, but I actually feel like I got more...
Yeah, no, once that had gone, I did, definitely, and I was waking up with more zap.
Yeah.
So if anyone's out there who's a coffee addict and just drinking it out of habit, really, which is what I was doing, just try. Try knocking it on the head, small little step in it. But
yeah.
Shall we... talk about the topic in hand.
Hmm.
So, yeah, we've talked about veganism a couple of weeks ago with Jodie. We talked about power last week and how we all wield power of varying degrees. We use it differently. And this week we're talking about responsibility, aren't we?
Well, the thing for me is that in the work I do with lots of different organisations, the biggest problem that I have to deal with is the separation of power and responsibility. Because the people in an organisation that have the power, which could be management or directorate or whatever, don't usually take responsibility for the enactment of that power. So they can command that people go and do things, but those people may not have the power to get it done. So they may not have the resources. That might mean money, could be equipment, could be... resources of different sorts, could be other people, could be whatever. But if they don't have the power to get the resources to do it, they can't do it. And yet they have the responsibility for the failure, if you see what I mean. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, and one of the things that really strikes me when I was thinking about it was in the First World War, you have that mad scenario where the high command... Let's send 5,000 troops up there, you know, to do that. You know, oh, we've lost them. I know, let's get another 10,000 and send them around there.
Give that a go.
Yeah, and the thing is that the people with the power on the hill are not actually doing it, are they?
Mm.
You know, and that's so true with so many situations, whether it's a king, whether it's a president, whether it is... someone who's sitting on the hill, they're not doing the work. They're not actually doing it.
Hmm.
So you've got the power, but they're not actually taking responsibility to make it happen.
Yeah, and as a result, they're missing out on... Well, obviously, they're not going to die, which is... I can see why. But they're missing out on the awareness of the situation, which would help them to make a better decision as well.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe you're not on the front line of some kind of epic battle. It's different. But, yeah, you know, if you're a manager or some kind of head of department and you're not on the shop floor... much as you should be, then...
One of the things that strikes me about politicians is...
Oh, we're on to it already.
Is that the
save that for later.
the politicians who are in the Department of Health, who exercise the power over what's going to happen with the National Health Service. I'm not saying them all, but many of them actually don't need to use the NHS because their position in life means that they can go privately to do things. And I'm sure many of them would jump up and down and beat their chest and say, no, of course we use the NHS. Yeah, but there are many people that don't have to use the NHS. And those people, quite often, are making decisions about what's going to happen with the NHS.
Yeah. And seeing it as almost a bit of a plaything, just pushing buttons and pulling levers that aren't really...
But power and responsibility, we've separated it out. Yeah. Whatever decisions they make, they don't take the responsibility to enact them on the ground. The people on the ground have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you wield your power responsibly?
With a big stick.
Yeah. Because you hold a lot of power over a lot of your clients and people you see in companies.
No. You don't hold power like that. It's more of a...
Well, you're in a powerful position.
Yeah, OK. You can influence things and influence people.
You are having some effect on your clients, I assume.
I hope. Yeah. But it's a collaboration. It's doing with, not doing to.
Uh-huh.
So to me, the responsible exercise of power at any level is if you do things with people, then it's a collective thing. If you do things to people, you separated power and responsibility out.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm trying to think of different analogies. I mean, yeah, we talk politics. In a sporting sense, there's if you look at like a football manager, there's different ways that managers will interact with a team. Some are quite hands-on and some are kind of quite distant, really, and they kind of just point and shout things, whereas... I'm not a Liverpool fan, but I don't know if you know of Jurgen Klopp, the Liverpool manager.
Yeah.
He's a really hands-on guy. He's jumping around with the fans. He's getting really involved in the game. At the end of the match, he runs on and hugs all his players. Even if they've lost sometimes, he'll go on and he'll hug them in a really kind of positive way. And I think the players in other teams he's managed as well respond really well to that because they feel like he's a part of the team. He's not just some distant guy kind of pulling strings from above. He's on the pitch with them at all times.
Yeah.
And that's good management from what...
So that's feeling like doing it with rather than doing it to.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what prompted that little...
But I guess that is a good example where you can have a manager who stood on the sideline, who's shouting and screaming at everybody, but he's not actually doing it.
Yeah, but he does take responsibility for everything as well. You know, he'll protect his players as well. If they've played badly at the end of the game, the fans will often... go at the players, but he'll protect them all and kind of say he'll do the interviews obviously and say like, I made these decisions, this is my fault, yada yada yada.
Again, and I suppose he's the guy that gets the sack too.
Well, at some point you probably will, all managers do, unless he's lucky enough to kind of say I've had enough, thanks and good night. Very rarely that happens, man. Alex Ferguson maybe, one of the only Sir Alex Ferguson.
Yeah,
good manager though.
Yeah,
old club. Actually, I grew up kind of disliking Liverpool quite a lot because all my mates supported them. But I've grown to quite like them now because he's a really top guy.
Yeah. But I think when you see people that magically have that ability to blend the two things together. And I have worked with company owners and with managers who do roll their sleeves up and get on with it with everybody else. You know, I've known managers who, when the team is short, will come in on a day off and do stuff, you know. And those people, I really admire the way they do that because they are with their staff.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that from my days. I used to work at Curry's on a Saturday when I was 18, 19, weekend job. And, yeah, I always warmed to the managers more in the store that would, you know, when there was a huge queue at the cash desk and I'm kind of, well, not stressed out because I was pretty cool about it, but... he would kind of hop on the other desk and till and rattle through a few customers and he wasn't afraid to kind of get his, roll his sleeves up.
Yeah.
Get his hands dirty and all that.
Well, one of the things that, for me, is a classic separation, and like I say, I was clicking into this when we had Jodie talking about the veganism stuff, is that when people go down to the shop and they buy a piece of dead body in a plastic box...
Oh, yeah. We'll come on to plastic later as well.
Yeah, plastic. Yeah, that's another one, yeah. So there's like, you got the dead body. Mm-hmm. Right now, the thing is that people have separated out the power and the responsibility. They take no responsibility for what happened to that animal to get it in the box, yeah? But they've exercised their power by demanding of the manufacturers and the shops that it's there in the box.
Yeah.
So we have a separation of power and responsibility. So as I said when we did that podcast, if you're in a restaurant and someone led a calf around and said, OK, guys, this is what's for tea, who's going to bang it on the head, everyone would be outraged. But they'd be outraged because they would be having to take responsibility for their power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that case, is it a sense of, why do we hand over responsibility there? It's a sense of fear. I mean, obviously, there's the kind of ease and of just buying it there and then. But are we afraid of confronting that situation? Or deep down?
But the thing is that most situations that people aren't taking responsibility for, their relationship with it would be different if they did. Like if someone had to bang, you know, if anybody listening to this had to go and smack an animal on the head and bleed it out and skin it and gut it and joint it for tea, I wonder how many people would become vegetarian overnight. Mm-hmm. Yeah? But it's easier if I get someone else to do it rather than take it. It's a bit like the house next door catches fire. We don't all run and get buckets and connect our hoses up. We dial 999 and then complain because they're not coming quick enough.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, we're separating out power and responsibility, whereas we have to start to take responsibility for the power that we're exercising. Mm. Yeah? There could be a million scenarios. I mean, it's popular to talk about the ISIS issues at the moment. You know, I could equally look at radical Christianity, radical Islam, radical Buddhism, in Burma, you know, any of those things. It's like there's a separation between the belief structure and what's actually happening. And the people that are running the belief aren't taking responsibility for the people that are enacting it.
Yeah.
Yeah? And everywhere you look, there's this separation of power and responsibility. And as soon as you get that, it strikes me that things fail. Mm-hmm. Things start to fall apart. Yeah.
Do you think we hand over then too much power and expect too much of our political systems and don't take enough responsibility ourselves? Because at the moment we've got these, you know, huge issues in Western politics. Kind of things are lurching to the right a little bit. We're closing down borders, a bit more protectionist. Do you think we've handed over too much power over the years and not kind of...
I think we get kind of emotionally and cognitively lazy. Mm. We have these magic people, they're called them. You know them?
Yeah.
They'll never let it happen, will they? They wouldn't do that, would they? Of course they'll do it, they'll look after us. Who are these people? The them. And as soon as we create them, which is not us, we've just devolved our responsibility to them. It's their fault, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm obsessed with, like, environmental issues. As a lot of people are, man, and the plastic issue has obviously come up more and more lately, and it's quite a massive thing now. At the weekend, I was at church, and the kids in Sunday school went into the church garden and car park and did a litter pick. And in fact, funny little side note, we had a plastic straw in our car for some reason. I think some kids' party, whatever. And I remember we got the straw out of the car just before we went into church and put it just in the bush next to the car so that we'd at least have a little plastic straw to put in the plastic bag, thinking there wouldn't be much. And anyway, at the end of the service, the kids came in with this huge bin bag full of plastic and rubbish that had accumulated in the church grounds, and everyone was kind of couldn't believe it, really, because it's not like it's not cleaned off in any way. Every few weeks some of the elders will go out and have a bit of a litter pick, so this was just 2 weeks worth of litter blown around. We then went next door after church to Tesco to get a few bits and bobs to get us through the day, and I happened to kind of look left in the car park, and I'll put a link to my tweet because I put the photo out and kind of shamed Tesco because the bush that next
it's
to the
quite
car park
scary was just, picture.
Whoa, man, it's horrendous. It's like some apocalyptic vision. I'm not sure if it's always like that, or we just had this heightened awareness because of what had just happened. And then, you know, I tweeted Tesco to say, look, your garden needs a bit of work. I also included later in the tweet thread to say, you know, it's not just Tesco's fault, because it's not just their fault, is it? It's not them that have... They haven't just opened the door and chucked all the rubbish out and let it blow across all of Heswell. We need to take responsibility, because why didn't I just go and pick it all up and start picking it up there and then?
Yep.
We've done our bit earlier in the day, but we've all got to take responsibility for these things. We can't just
rely. That's the point, isn't it? It's like we've got the power to buy the plastic, but do we take responsibility to pick it up? I wonder what would happen if everybody from not any particular supermarket, but from whatever supermarket you got it from.
Yeah.
I wonder what would happen if everybody next week took all their plastics back to the supermarket and gave them back to the supermarket.
Well, I know I've seen things on Facebook suggesting that, and even putting addresses for Tesco head office where you can send all the single use or unnecessary plastic. Because I get a bunch, we get ours from Asda, and we get a bunch of bananas delivered, and it's in a plastic wrapper. But it's all kind of, bananas tend to have this handy way of growing in bunches together.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why do you need that on there? So I think sending things like that back is okay. Other things which are more essential for meat or for things that need a bit of protective wrapping, maybe we need to take responsibility in the first place for buying that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's twofold. It's like us taking our responsibility back for the power that we're enacting, but also giving the responsibility back to the people that are enacting power.
Yeah, because Tesco is a massive, what is it, one in every £8 spent in the UK, spent in Tesco, I think. That was the stat.
I don't
know. Last few years, so it's something like that. They're a massive, massive, massive company.
You talk about cycling, right? And
I do it as well. I don't just talk about it.
You do, yeah.
I had an incident this morning, actually, but go on.
Okay. Tell us in a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you've floated my boat, because I'm thinking, I do a lot of stuff around the world where we live, and could I do it on a bike? And the only way I could do it on a bike would be to have a bike with an electric motor, for two reasons. One is the distances I'd have to cover.
Yeah.
But the other one is I can't arrive to a meeting or to see somebody sweating like a pig. You know what I mean? So I'd need to arrive fairly fresh.
Do pigs sweat? Oh, oink.
I don't know.
Apparently.
I'm not quite. Very interesting.
Yeah,
they must do.
Yeah, well, you need to work out your kind of daily mileage. There must be a day or two when you could do it.
Well, I was thinking I could actually go to Clatterbridge on a bike. I was looking at the routes I could take. Oh,
yeah, nice little. Yeah. Yeah, you could probably get a nice little route there.
Yeah, the time I go in the morning, roads would be empty anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to cut across, it would probably take me 35 to 40 minutes looking at. But with an electric motor I could probably speed that up.
Give a little whiz up the odd hill here and there.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, that's it, man. Responsibility, but you can also sit and shout from our armchairs about climate change and emissions and air quality, but what are you going to do about it, folks? I mean, it's quite an easy decision for me because I have a shortish commute. Well, it's 4.5 miles, so I tell people that I cycle nearly 5 miles every day, both like two ways, and they're kind of like, what? It's like 20 minutes. It's nothing, you know?
So. Yeah, so mine's about 8 miles, 8 miles, 9 miles across country.
Okay.
But like I say, with the motor on, that would be a lot easier to do and to arrive in one piece going, hello, I'm here.
And you wouldn't have the stress of being on the roads and cars doing daft things, which, I caught a parent in a bit of a rush this morning on the way to school, kind of nearly reversed over my lad, Will. In fact, I kind of saw it coming and kind of went in front of him and had to bash my wheel into the side of the car to stop it. Banged on the window, had a little polite little conversation with her. But I don't know. Yeah, crazy. But be careful out there, but it's,
I guess that you're looking again to power and responsibility. Okay, you got a car. A car can be used, as we've seen over the last 24 hours, 48 hours, can be used as a weapon, can it? Or as an accidental weapon.
Yeah, however. There's no intention to kill, but that. Those three teenagers.
Yeah.
Crazy. That road, there's loads of pedestrians. That's a 60-mile-an-hour road. I can't believe it. I can't believe it when I read that.
But if you think about that, it's like we have the power to put our foot down. Do we take responsibility for putting our foot down?
Yeah.
Yeah? So that's what I mean about the more I think about it, this issue of power and responsibility lock together completely. Everything that we do has an effect. If we do it mindfully, so that we can actually be responsible for what we're doing. That's the point, because it fits back into all the mindfulness stuff that we talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah? And it's only when you look at things mindfully that you can be truly responsible for what you're doing.
Yeah,
rather than just doing it because I want to. Yeah. And all the people that say to me, your problem is that you think too much, or, you know, just do what you want. You know, you want to eat a pig, eat a pig. You know, they're the people that are being mindless and not mindfully looking at what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I guess someone who wants to eat pigs, who's mindful, is someone who would really ensure that the pigs that they were eating were treated the best possible way that a pig could be treated.
Yeah.
Rather than just getting the cheapest meat that you can from the cheapest shop.
Mm-hmm. Hit and run. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quote on a blog post I'm going to stick in the show notes, which I liked. It kind of defied this kind of definition of responsibility. A detachable burden easily shifted to the shoulders of God, fate, fortune, luck, or one's neighbour. In the days of astrology, it was customary to unload it upon a star. That was Ambrose Bierce, The Devil's Dictionary in 1911. And the responsibility is very easy. It's easy to kind of unload a burden on someone else or someone else. You know, it's someone else's problem.
But that's them, isn't it? Them. You know, it's their fault.
Yeah.
You know, them. They won't let it happen. They will let it happen. How have they allowed this to happen? I mean, who is this them?
Yeah.
You know, and whether the them is depersonalized to a god or a star or...
Do we do it because of laziness or just a worry that we're going to get things wrong or that we're going to have to apologize for something at some point, or is it just habit or what?
I think it's all of those things, depending on which way you come at it. I think that people are essentially quite lazy, which is the first stumbling block, because to actually take responsibility for something usually means you've got to do something. You can't just walk by on the other side of the road, as it were. Mm-hmm. You have to do something.
Yeah.
You know. So how many times do we walk by on the side of the road and not help other people or do other things? You know, take that bit of responsibility. Yeah, and if you think about the community that you live in, how many people around you are living on their own? You know, are they okay? Are they looked after? Do they have needs?
Mm.
You know, all that kind of stuff. So if we take responsibility, it's that thing that I always keep bleating on about, if we all look after each other, we'll all be okay. But that means if we all take responsibility, we'll all be okay.
Yep.
And don't wait for them to make it all right for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's fascinating. There's issues of kind of confidence here and presence as well, I think, aren't there? Kind of, a lot of people hand over responsibility, maybe because they haven't got the confidence to kind of stick the head up of the parapet and say, yeah, I think this needs to change, I'm going to do this.
Yep, yep. And I think that then comes down to the people that do have a confidence have a kind of responsibility to work with the people that don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's this thing about, are we going to look after each other? And when you think about things like that, there are services around us now that provide advocacy services. So that you've got somebody who doesn't have a voice. Maybe they've got a disability, maybe they've got some kind of emotional deficit, whatever's going on, and they need someone to be able to voice what they need. And an advocate will do that for you.
Yeah.
And that's somebody helping another person take responsibility for themselves.
Sure.
Yeah.
We talked a lot in the power episode last week about how the transfer of power is kind of the responsible thing to do. So maybe there's people listening in positions of power that don't quite know how, if they're doing the right thing or not. People, I don't know, management that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that handing over power to the person that you're working with or underneath you, inverted commas, is the responsible thing to do.
Yeah.
And kind of to trust them with it.
Yeah. And that means that you bring everybody on. Yeah. The most inefficient and the most insecure and the most inadequate managers micromanage because they're terrified of losing control.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just really destroy the team around them. Yeah. And that they say things like, well, if you want something done, do it yourself, and all that kind of stuff. Now, if you want something done, bring your team on and empower them to do what needs to be done. You know, don't disempower them with your micromanagement.
Is that why we got kind of political systems in Britain and the US that are kind of tearing themselves apart, like the Conservative Party is just eating itself alive at the
moment.
Isn't
it? Yeah.
Trump has lost a lot of people who've kind of come and gone from his regime.
Yeah.
Is that because he's clinging on to that? He's got this power all of a sudden and he's doesn't know how to use it or doesn't want to give it up, or he's got this vision that he wants to see through?
Well, I'm obviously biased, and I admit my bias, but it would seem to me that Donald is not taking responsibility for his power. He says the most outrageous things and then has no responsibility for what he said. He will abuse a whole country or a whole section of society, and just like that's okay. There was a wonderful part on the interview that he did with Piers Morgan.
Which I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, have a look. But there's a thing on that where Piers Morgan is trying to get him to apologise for something.
Oh, I've seen that. That was kind of released early, the Britain First retweets.
But what he said was, in the end, he said, well, Piers, if you really want me to apologise that, then I'll do so. That was it.
And then he didn't apologise.
He didn't apologise.
I would apologise for that if it made you happy. But then he didn't. All Piers had to say, well, go on then.
Yeah, go on, do it then. Go.
I wonder if he's ever said the word sorry for anything.
But
it was like such a... I could see him. He was really squirming, wasn't he? He just didn't want to say that word, that S word.
But what a lack of insight. Because just being able to just be responsible for what you're saying and what you're doing would transform the guy. I mean, I'm sure the guy's got a good heart in there. He's a bit misguided for me, and he's got a few issues. But if he was just kind of tightened it up a bit, he'd probably be a cracking lad, you know?
I'm fascinated by him just endlessly. Yeah. I mean, who knows where we're going to end up, but he's fascinating, isn't he? Flipping it.
Yeah.
And there's a link I'm going to put to kind of teaching tips for kids to make them responsible. I was actually trying to find links for how we can teach responsibility generally, but all of them were about child-related, so there was nothing I could find, really, on teaching responsibility to anyone over the age of 10.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a gap in the market there, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something that, I don't know, adults are just expected to be responsible.
But very obviously not.
Yeah.
Well, one of the last kind of things I'd say in this is that you were talking about plastics, is that the statistics on the disposable coffee cups Costa, Starbucks, whatever. Was it 5 billion that we throw in the bin that were unrecyclable?
Something like that.
Yeah.
A lot.
And they're moving towards doing recyclable ones. But if we in this country are doing 5 billion, how many is that are being used every day? Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll check the figures on that, but it's a lot. It's a scary number. Yeah.
It's a scary number, yeah. But the if you think about the move at the moment, which is if you're going to drink coffee from places like that, use a reusable cup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be responsible and carry that cup with you. You want the coffee, use the cup. And even, I understand that a lot of those companies are now giving you a discount if you bring a cup.
Yep.
So you can get the coffee cheaper.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's like that kind of thing is a no-brainer. You know, we could be saving so much by taking responsibility for us exercising the power to have coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Who doesn't want coffee? Caf or decaf? Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, I will do it in the end of my detox.
What about your coffee pods? Are they recyclable?
They all get recycled.
Nespresso ones, are they?
Yeah, they all go back to Nespresso, and the metal parts are all recycled back into pods.
And I was looking into that, the aluminium, aren't they?
Yeah, and the coffee is used for composty type stuff.
Fair dinks.
So it all gets used.
Yeah. All right. You got a resource of the week?
Well, I'm staying with what I resourced last week. Because if you haven't got it, you ought to get it.
Bhagavad Gita.
Because to me, it's the clearest explanation of karma and dharma. So karma being the result of your action and dharma being to act in the right way. So if you act in the right way and take responsibility for your power, you minimise the karma or the consequence of what you do.
Cool. Okay.
So I'm sticking with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, love it. I'm going to mention a website called Go Effing Do It. Can I say that? I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say it without offending
you just
people.
Said it.
Effing. It's the actual F word. GoFuckingDoIt.com. I said it. I'm not even going to bleep it out. And I stumbled across this. This is basically a site that'll help you get stuff done. Really simply, though, so you start with this box where you put in what it is you want to do in your life, whether it's some kind of physical goal or whatever work thing. You then put a stake on it, an amount of money. 25. It's in dollars, so $2,500.
Right.
You then nominate kind of someone to oversee it. So I would say put in your email address and then put a deadline. So 2 months, 3 months, whatever, 6 months is fine. So that person gets an email to say, Ed has promised to do this by this date. If he hasn't done it, let us know and we'll take $100 from his credit card and give it to charity. So you have to nominate a charity as well. Right. It's basically a cool little tool, I thought, for getting stuff done.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
GoFandDoIt.com. .co, yeah. Yeah, .com.
That reminded me of, I think it was a Richard Branson book, Screw It, Let's Do It.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, okay. Similar. Okay, yeah. All done.
Yeah, I'm good.
We'll be back next week.
Yeah, we're going to be visiting a bit of grief next week.
Yes, okay. Yeah, we've got a listener email, which we'll be sorting out. Again, if there's anything you would like us to discuss, send us a message on any of our social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Send us an email through the site, liveinthepresent.co.uk, and let us know, because we're always up for new topics, things we may have missed down the months and years.
Yeah.
And yeah, Sean, have a good week.
And you, take care.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.